Christ is risen. Indeed, he is risen. Indeed. The calendar says it's Easter Sunday, but for many of us, our hearts say it's Friday. The day says it's time to celebrate resurrection, but our lives say we're dead and we're dying. Today, we start a new series called Hope in the Dark. It's a very untraditional Easter series, but when has Sycamore Creek ever been blamed for being traditional? It's a series about suffering. You see, the church celebrates Easter today and resurrection, but many of us, our lives are in a very different place. Our lives are in a place of suffering. I had a professor in seminary. His name was Grant Wacker, and he was an American religious history professor. He liked to tell us that science opens the door to doubt, it cracks the door open, and suffering kicks you through it. He went on to encourage us, said, listen, as pastors, you better speak to both science and suffering. So every couple of years, we do a series, a whole series, looking at science and faith. Every couple of years, we do a whole series looking at suffering. Today is that series. Today is that series. It's based on a book called Hope in the Dark, written by Craig Groeschel, Believing God is Good When Life is Not. If you're a guest here today, we have a free book, a free copy of this for you. They are on a table right out the back door. Pick one of those up on your way out. If you're a regular around here, we've got some in the micro bookstore for you that you can purchase. But if you're a guest, you honor us with your presence today. We want to honor you with a gift. Please pick up one of those books. There's plenty of them. There's even more than that are on that table. We'd like you to have one today. The book, Hope in the Dark, is about a book of the Bible named Habakkuk. Habakkuk was a prophet that prophesied about 600 years before Jesus. He was in the southern part of Israel. He saw the prosperity of the southern part of Israel. It's called Judah. He saw the prosperity of it. It was good economic times. But he also saw behind the curtain. He saw the deception. He saw the injustice. He saw the corruption that was going on behind the scenes. And he's a very unusual prophet because most prophets speak to the people for God, God's mouthpiece to the people. But Habakkuk speaks for the people to God. He's the people's mouthpiece to God. And he asks a question that I think 2,600 years later still resonates with many of us. Why doesn't God seem fair? Why doesn't God seem fair? I know you can do something about this corruption. I know you can do something about this injustice. Why aren't you doing it? He asks a bunch of questions of God. He says, how long, O Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? How many of you have ever thought that? You pray to God, you ask God something over and over and over again, and you feel like, God, you've got your fingers in your ears. Aren't you listening to me? Violence is everywhere, I cry, but you do not come to save. What he sees going on doesn't line up with what he believes, what he grew up believing. What, you know, those of you who are drugged here today by your grandma, what your grandma tells you to believe. It does. You look out there and you don't see what you're told to believe. You don't see God. Now, this is a warning for this message, okay? This is not a sitcom sermon. You know how a sitcom goes. At the beginning, everybody's friends, and then there's some problem that happens. And by the end of the 30 minutes, before the bell rings, the problem is resolved, and everyone are friends again, all in 30 minutes. This isn't that kind of message, because sometimes life isn't resolved in 30 minutes. Sometimes it's not resolved in 30 years. this isn't a sitcom sermon. Sometimes you've got the good life. Things are going well. Then cancer sneaks in. You fight back. Cancer goes away. Cancer comes back. The life is gone. The good life is gone. What? That's where many of us are today. The calendar says it's Easter Sunday. Our lives are still in the graveyard. And then, of course, some well-meaning Christian comes along and says, Brother Bill, let go and let God. Brother Jackson, everything happens for a reason. You know, Brother Marty, listen, just pray and God will answer. You know, and you want to wring their neck, right? Because those are half-truths. There's a little kernel of truth in there, but that's not the whole truth. Some of you are not in a suffering place today, so let me give you a tip for your friends who are in suffering. Sit and knit and cook a bit, all right? When you're hanging out with somebody who's suffering or in a season of suffering, just go sit with them. Don't try to resolve it. Don't try to speak Christian platitudes. You don't have to say anything. And knit. Now, I don't mean literally knit. I don't actually knit. But, you know, what is it that you do? Do you watch the game together? Do you know, what is it? Just sort of passing time. And cook a bit. Food always helps. Food always helps. Sit and knit and cook a bit. Habakkuk wrestles with God. I want you to hear him wrestling. He says, must I forever see these evil deeds? Why must I watch all this misery? Wherever I look, I see destruction and violence. He's the mouthpiece of people to God. He goes on. He says, I'm surrounded by people who love to argue and fight on Facebook. The law has become paralyzed, and there is no justice in the courts. The wicked far outnumber the righteous, so that justice has become perverted. I don't really think you're doing what's right, is what Habakkuk's saying to God. You ever said that to God? I don't think what you're doing is right. Habakkuk has three basic beefs with God. You don't seem to care. You're not doing much when you could. And what you are doing, well, that just doesn't seem fair to begin with. It would have been better for you to do nothing than to do that. He's wrestling with God. When have you wrestled with God? How many of you have felt if you were God, you would do something differently? Yep, we all have. Is it ever okay to question God? Is it ever okay to push back on God? Is it ever okay to yell at God? I think Habakkuk, I mean, this is a book of the Bible. This is a prophet of the Lord, and he's doing it. If you read the prayer book of the Bible, the Psalms, you'll see that the psalmists and the prayers ask God questions all the time. When Jesus hung on the cross on Friday, what did he say? My God, why? Some Christians will tell you it's not okay to ask God why. But I think if Jesus did it, if the Son of God did it, if the resurrected Lord asked God why, then it must be okay for you and for me to ask God why too. You see, there's a kind of natural progression of faith. It looks something like this. You first come to be a believer. You first come to commit your life to follow Jesus, and everything is awesome. You show up for church on Sunday, and you feel like I read your diary, and I'm preaching right to you. God sends me your diary, by the way. That's when you check that box on the connection card, it comes to me in my email. It's a PDF file. Everything's awesome. Your prayer life is awesome. You feel God's presence. You pray and you feel like God's answering your prayer. You even pray in the parking lot and a spot opens up right there for you. Life is good. But then something happens. You show up at church someday. And I apparently didn't read your diary that day. The sermon was, for somebody else. The music wasn't the greatest. There wasn't a mandolin in the band today. For somebody else. And then the stuff hits the fan. Some real crisis happens. The diagnosis comes. You lose your job. You go through a divorce. Your parents get divorced. You lose a loved one. In the midst of that dark place, I think we feel like there are two options. One is like, you know, those well-meaning Christians that come along and tell you, you know, everything happens for a reason. God won't give you anything more than you can handle. The first temptation in that place of crisis is to deny that the situation is really bad. Well, it must not be that bad. The second temptation is to deny that God cares or God exists. I had an experience like that when I was in college. When I went to college, I had a period of losing my religion. It's not all that uncommon, right? Probably if we asked how many of you lost your religion in college, most of you would have your hand in the air. I grew up in a Christian home. My mom is a very faithful follower of Jesus, still is today. And I was in church all the time. I was in youth group in high school, very active in my church's youth ministry. And when I went off to college, I went to a Christian liberal arts school outside of Chicago. And so I was surrounded by other followers of Jesus. The professors were Christians. We talked about faith in class all the time. And yet I started to have questions. Questions that I didn't seem to get answers for. I had a lot of doubts and uncertainties. And for a while, I left my faith behind me. I walked away from it. I didn't believe it anymore. I couldn't answer those questions. You see, the temptation in that moment would have been to say, well, let's just ignore the questions. Let's just pretend that they don't exist. They're not as big as I'm making them out to be. But the other temptation, which I gave into, was just to deny God. Well, the questions can't be answered. So God must not care, God must not exist. But when I got over to this side, I noticed something. I noticed that there were just as many questions and just as much uncertainty on the side of unbelief as there was on the side of belief. But when I was over here in the dark of the questions and uncertainty, I noticed something about the dark over there. Over there was hope. Hope in the dark. And so I made a conscious decision to believe in spite of my uncertainty. To not pretend that I didn't have questions and not pretend that I had all the answers to them. In fact, I still have questions. We're a church that's curious, creative, and compassionate. We're curious because your questions are welcome. Your questions are welcome because your pastor's got questions too. I didn't deny the questions. I still wrestled with God. But I made a decision to believe, to have hope in the midst, in the darkness of those questions. In the midst of that darkness, Habakkuk receives a prophecy. In Hebrew, that word prophecy is a masah. It's an utterance. It's a wait. It's a doom. And then God responds. And at first, God's response sounds pretty good. Let's see what God says. Look around at the nations. Look and be amazed. Like Habakkuk's thinking, you know what? I was on a bus ride, a Greyhound across country, and I just got a flight ticket. I'm going to go on the plane across country. This is sounding good. God says further, for I am doing something in your own day, something you wouldn't believe, even if somebody told you about it. He showed up at the gate, and guess what they gave him? An upgrade to business class, right? You ever been in business class? I've only been in there once. It was a fluke. I think it was supposed to be some other Tom Arthur that was in there. It's like a spa up in business class. You've got a full bed. They bring little warm towels that you can put on your face and wash your hands. As much beer and wine as you want to drink. It's spectacular. But then God drops the hammer. God says, I'm raising up the Babylonians. Those are the enemy. A cruel and violent people. They will march across the world and conquer other lands. This is not so sounding good anymore. They are notorious for their cruelty and do whatever they like. All of a sudden, Habakkuk's business class ticket has been downgraded back to Greyhound, and it's a Greyhound bus that's crammed, and there's like a big smelly guy on one side of you and somebody talking on their phone all the way across country. Today's not a business class sermon. Today's a crammed on the bus kind of sermon. God tells Habakkuk, I'm going to use your enemies to bring justice because of your sin. Hold on, wait, I preferred your silence, God. I preferred you not talking to me. So what's a committed follower of Jesus supposed to do in this moment? What's somebody who wants to still believe supposed to do? I think a hint to the answer to that question is in Habakkuk's name itself. Habakkuk is a Hebrew name, and it means two things. It could either be translated as embrace, or it could be translated as wrestle. So the committed believer, I think, can both wrestle with honest questions and at the same time embrace a genuine faith in God. That's what I learned in college. I could wrestle with the questions I had and still embrace God at the same time. Wrestle and embrace. Now, we have a special guest here this morning to help us kind of understand that a little bit more. I want to invite Jackson Ross to come on up. Jackson is a guy who knows a lot about wrestling because he's an MSU wrestler, if you can't tell. I'm not going to try to wrestle him this morning. He's from Detroit Catholic Central. Look at the gun. I mean, those are some serious guns you've got there. Yeah. Is that what you always do when you are standing over somebody?
That was a special occasion. I don't always do that, but I do like the picture. I appreciate it.
That was your lucky day, apparently.
That was my lucky day.
All right. This is a video of one of your teammates doing some wrestling. Man, this is an intimate sport.
It is.
Like you guys get up in each other's junks and trunks.
You're never really closer to someone than you are when you're wrestling them. It's a pretty intense sport, but extremely rewarding. That's Ravon Foley. He's an All-American for us. And he's one of the better wrestlers in the country. So,
you guys ever wrestle?
Ravon weighs 125 pounds, and I'm sitting at about 250. So, I don't think we should ever wrestle. I don't think it would go well.
Probably not. How did you get into wrestling?
So, when I went to Detroit Catholic Central, and when I was touring there in my eighth grade year, head wrestling coach came up to me, and I had never been in the sport at all, and he said, hey, all our best football players here are wrestlers. And at the time, I was a pretty big football player, and so the 14-year-old me thought, oh, well, that means I have to wrestle. I have to be the best football player I can be. Turned out he was not being very truthful. I was the only football player on the wrestling team. But the ball started rolling from there, and it turned out to be one of the greatest things I've ever did. And I'm here now at Michigan State and still loving it.
It is an intimate sport. I mean, I don't get that close to anybody unless I'm wrestling with my kids and wrestling with my wife, which is a euphemism for something else. But body odor, sweat, body parts? I mean,
right,
what's that like?
It's pretty intense. Like you said, you're never really closer to anyone other than your kids or your wife. But at the same time, you gain a level of respect for the person you're wrestling with because you're never going to be closer to someone than you are during your wrestling match. So, yeah, you're trying to, rip each other's heads off and put them down to the mat, and you're trying to literally physically dominate the guy, but at the same time, there's just such a mutual respect that's occurring. It's a pretty cool experience because you know that he's giving it his best to try to beat you, and you're giving your best to try to beat him. And at this, you have to respect him and his skills, and he respects you. So it's a cool level of respect that you don't really see in any other sports, because it's such an individual sport. It's just you versus him. You know, there's a team aspect, but at the end of the day, it's two guys on a mat, and only one guy will get his hand raised.
You ever wrestle with somebody you didn't respect?
That does happen. You know, there's rivalries in every sport, but the most interesting part about wrestling, I think, is you try to respect everyone, but when you don't respect someone in wrestling, I have found that that's when I wrestle the worst. I think when I respect someone and when they respect me, it brings out my best wrestling. If I don't respect someone and I'm just going up against them, it's going to be me holding back a little bit. I'm going to be kind of scared to lose, you know, and he'll probably be the same. So it's not going to be the quality of wrestling that you want to see. But when I respect someone, that's when I kind of leave it all out on the mat, as they say. You know, I'm wrestling freely. I'm not holding anything back. And that doesn't really happen when you don't respect anyone. So what I try to respect everyone. And there's a couple instances where I haven't respected people in the past. And, I mean, that's become some of my most boring matches.
Have you ever wrestled somebody that you knew there was no way you were going to win? No way that it was going to be your hand in the air at the end?
That does happen. There was a good instance of it earlier this year. I was wrestling Penn State wrestling. If you guys don't know, I think they won 7 of the last 8 national championships. So they're pretty intense. And I was wrestling a Penn State wrestler, and he was the number one guy in the country. Going in, I don't think anyone in the whole arena, you know, thought I could win, except myself, which is what you kind of have to have during wrestling. And yeah, you know, I think when you're going against somebody or a force that you are so, I mean, they're so favored against you, it brought out the best in me, because my thought process was, well, no one thinks I can win, so I might as well just go out there and give it my all, leave it all out on the mat. And if I lose, hey, I'm going to lose fighting, because no one really thought I could win. And if I win, no, everyone's going to be surprised but me. And so when I'm wrestling those kind of guys, the guys that are really favored against me, I believe that it brings out the best in me. And it's a really cool experience, especially if you end up beating them, because everyone's shocked but you.
Did you beat the guy?
I did not beat the guy. No, but it was one of the better wrestling matches I've ever been a part of, and definitely one of the best matches I've ever wrestled. And even though I lost, like I said before, it brought out my best wrestling, which is all I really care about. Wins and losses are important, but at the end of the day, you know, it's how you perform and how you feel after the match. I can win a match against, you know, not the best wrestler, who I respect, but he might not be the best wrestler, and I won't feel that great about it, because, you know, maybe I didn't wrestle too well. I could have finished it earlier, but when I lose against a high-level guy like that, and I lose giving it my all, you can't be disappointed in yourself, because there was nothing more you could do. You gave it your all, so you can't be mad at yourself. It was the best you could give it that day.
He told me when we talked on the phone a couple weeks ago that sometimes your lost matches are your best matches.
Right. So that's kind of reiterating the fact that sometimes when I lose, I feel like it was my best wrestling I've ever had. You know, the competition and the level of respect was so high that it just brought out the best in me. And, you know, sometimes our coaches are going to say that, hey, you shouldn't have respect for this guy. And that just means, you know, he might be really good. He might have a big reputation, but don't let it get in your head, his reputation. And I think that's great and all, but I kind of think the other way. I want his reputation in my head, because I want that to kind of fuel me. And yeah, I may lose. I've lost quite a lot of wrestling matches, but there's only a couple losses that really sting me, and those are the ones that maybe I should have beat the guy and it was just a low-scoring match, and, you know, my full my whole wrestling ability wasn't displayed during the match. And like, my best wrestling is, it can be a loss, it can be a win, but it's usually when we all just let it fly and we respect each other, and it's good wrestling.
Hey friends, will you join me in thanking Jackson for being here this morning? He'll be arm wrestling in the cafe afterwards. I want you to watch how Habakkuk embraces and wrestles with God at the same time. Listen to how he talks to God. He says, "O Lord, my God, my Holy One, you who are eternal." Embrace, right? He's embracing God. "Surely you do not plan to wipe us out." He's wrestling with God. "O Lord, our rock." He's embracing God. "You have sent these Babylonians to correct us, to punish us for our many sins." Now he's wrestling with God. "But you are pure." He's embracing God. "And cannot stand the sight of evil." Embracing God. "Will you wink at their treachery?" He's wrestling with God. "Should you be silent while the wicked swallow a people more righteous than they?" He's wrestling with God. Here's something I want you to understand. I think that God would rather you come at him yelling and wrestling than to turn away and walk silently away from him. I think God would rather you embrace him and wrestle him than not wrestle him and let him go. 2018 was a hell of a year for me. I lost two parents. My stepmom died and my dad died. In between their deaths, my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. She went through three surgeries and chemotherapy. The end of 2018, I ended up in the emergency room twice with shingles. It's like the adult version of chicken pox. Do you know what causes shingles? Stress. It was like an exclamation mark at the end of 2018 for me. During the summer, while my wife was going through surgeries and chemotherapy, I was supposed to be on sabbatical. It was a sabbatical that I had planned since I came here 9-10 years ago. I was supposed to be reading and studying and traveling, and instead what I was doing was doing a lot of caregiving. I was doing a lot of just menial tasks at home, cooking, cleaning, and clothes. I got two little kids. Do you know what you do every day? Cooking and cleaning and clothes. Cooking and cleaning and clothes. Cooking and cleaning and clothes. Cooking, cleaning. That's what my sabbatical was. A good portion of it. In the midst of that was also cancer and chemo and cursing at God. Now here's what I want you to hear again today. I think that God would rather you curse at him, wrestle and embrace, than walk away from him and be silent. I've only cursed at God twice in my life. That was one of them this past summer. And what I learned was that anger and intimacy are the opposite sides of the same coin. Embrace and wrestle. Embrace and wrestle. True intimacy with God is not just to know God at the mountaintop, but to be intimate with God in the valley. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Craig Rochelle wrote this book, Hope in the Dark, for someone else who was suffering, but while he was writing it, his daughter got sick. She was sick for a week and then sick for 2 weeks and sick for 3 weeks and 3 months and 4 months and 8 months and no diagnosis. And it was all while he was writing this book about Habakkuk and suffering. And he expected and kept waiting for it to be resolved. He tells a story in the sermon that he preached on this topic about writing the book and about reading it back for himself. I want you to hear Craig's own story.
This is where I've been for 2 years and 4 months with my daughter who hurts every day. Adrian, the words I wrote for you, these were the words that ministered to me. This was what knocked me off. The words God gave to me for somebody else were words that God had for me. What if honestly acknowledging your doubts is your first step toward building a deeper faith? What if embracing your secret questions opens the door for a maturing knowledge of God's character? What if drawing closer to God, developing genuine intimacy with him, requires you to bear something that feels unbearable? To hear him through an ominous utterance, to trust him in the moment of doom, to embrace his strength when you're weak with a burden? What if it takes real pain to experience deep and abiding hope? Let me tell you more than you care to know about writing a book. What most people don't understand is when you write a book, you turn the manuscript in a year or more before the book comes out. So I finished this manuscript well over a year ago. With everything in me, I wrote about Mandy, I wrote about my own faith struggles. I knew that late in the editing process, I would add an appendix. And in the appendix, I would have the miracle story. She was sick and now she's not. There is no appendix.
This sermon doesn't have an appendix. It's not a business class sermon. It's not a sitcom sermon. It's raw. It's real. It's authentic. It's where our lives are at. That's chapter 1 of Habakkuk. There's 3 chapters in the book of Habakkuk. Next week is chapter 2. It doesn't get much better next week. But then there's chapter 3. I hope you'll stick around for chapter 3. God, many of us here today on this Easter morning, this beautiful sunrise day, our lives aren't experiencing resurrection. They're experiencing pain, suffering, and doubt. God, in the midst of that, help us to not turn silently away from you, but God, help us to embrace you while we wrestle with you. In the name of Jesus and the power of the Spirit, and all who agreed said, Amen.